To the, in contrast, though, there are third-party legal opinions, which, again, is the type of opinion most all of us are accustomed to dealing with, giving or receiving. And in those matters, it's clearly defined as to what is being covered and how it's being said. In third-party transactions, in third-party opinions, the transactions are very common transactions. They are bank loans, they are security issuances, they are mergers and acquisitions. Common sense, and their structure is common, and more importantly, the legal issues that the opinion recipient wants addressed, they're fairly customary, and the wording of the opinion is fairly customary, and therefore, what you are covering, what the person receiving your opinion is getting, and how it's stated, isn't a new ground to be covered as it was in the Klein opinions. But more importantly, third-party opinions are prepared and understood in accordance with customary practice. Customary practice is a term of slight art and a term of slight science. Back in the early 70s, a man named James Fool at the Proskauer firm in New York got tired of going back and forth with legal opinions, fighting on what they meant and what they didn't mean. And he wrote sort of the seminal article of bringing these legal opinions out of chaos, which article gave rise to the approach to a common, developing a common understanding of what legal opinions in the third-party practice should cover, how they should be dealt with, and particularly what words and phrases in them that are commonly used should mean, and also what's the diligence expected. So the nature of customary practice does satisfy these guidances by, as the slide indicates, and I'll repeat again, it does in two principal ways. It identifies the diligence expected to be performed to give the opinions, and it provides guidance on how certain words, phrases used in the opinion should be understood. Implicit in the diligence, and also when you're giving those opinions, when you're going to qualify them, you're going to provide exceptions, inclusions, other modifications, even those, while not sacrosanct in the world of third-party customary practice, they do have an understood relationship to the opinions given. One is accustomed to the opinion that's requested that the agreement's enforceable. If you look at the standard third-party opinion, that's the opinion that has pages and pages and pages of exceptions. While to the person who's never seen the opinion for the first time, they say, why does one sentence give rise to three pages of exceptions? Or more importantly, why does the person who received it accept it? And that is because it is customary practice. People in the third-party world, opinion practice world, understand the significance of what's being given and how it's being qualified. Third-party opinion practice, if I could ask Bob to go back to that slide where it said that one, third customary practice opinion. One more back, I think. One more. There you go. At the bottom of that page, we have a couple of sites. And the back of the slide presentation is a series of is a set of references. While customary practice has been developed now for over 40 plus years, and it continues to be developed, there were one time two basic documents called the guidelines and the principles. And they have been now updated by something called the Statement of Opinion Practices. Each of these items are referenced on the page that we're looking at. Those are all referenced back in the references. One giant reference for all of you, if you don't remember any of the references, is that the ABA, the Legal Opinions Committee of the Business Law Section, has a webpage. It's called the Legal Opinion Resource Center. And on that webpage, you will find every meaningful opinion practice article that you can think of covering just about every topic that's been published of any national prominence. In addition, on that page, you will find you will find copies of bar reports published by your state bar, to the extent it's a published one, as well as various practice groups like the real estate practice group, the venture capital practice group. Those bar reports And those other reports on that page or that site are the kind of basis for what goes into customary practice. Now, you don't need to read the Arizona Bar Report for the Texas opinion, but it's good to have good familiarity with one of the principal items on this particular slide called the Statement of Opinion Practices. It's a short 4-page double space series of statements. After you read them, you say they make sense, but they provide lots of guidance. So in the third party practice world, you have basically guidance, you have commonality as to the transactions covered, commonality and customary understanding of what opinions are being given and what the diligence required and what they mean. One other major protection or safeguard they have is that they have what I call a vetting process. You are giving this opinion to a recipient, and that recipient has a lawyer. And while that lawyer and that recipient understand customary practice, it understands what those words mean, it doesn't necessarily always say, I will take whatever you gave me. It is sort of the safeguard to determine what has been rendered to it is in fact responsive to the particular transaction and the transaction's opinion requirements. It's this vetting process that somewhat provides a backstop.